I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening. This is Shisada Kona Kamara. Welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. I'm joined again by Piela Yin. For those of you who shared some concern over her health, she is a little bit on the mend, but her voice is still not terribly strong, so I'm going to try to keep her talking with us to a minimum tonight. So let's go ahead and everybody get centered, call yourselves forward, and let's do our protection. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. PLEN and I place ourselves in service to all of those listening to the program. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. So, tonight is, we're going to start out a little different in that there's something kind of specific that I have touched on. It was actually the very first program, I think, maybe second program that we did. And it's something I didn't really get into much detail with. And I don't know that I really need to get into too terribly much detail with it again tonight. But I do want to bring it up because there's energetics that have been running, and they're running very strongly right now. And I know, you know, I have people in communication with me that they're certainly experiencing it. And when I send out messages like on Facebook and stuff, I have people who always respond back like, oh, my gosh, like you're so accurate. I'm so in the middle of this. But there's a lot of energy that's moving right now. And what I want to talk about is the 144,000 volunteers who came here to this planet from what I call the illumined worlds. It's hysterical because I have a someone who's very dear to me who, when she heard that she's from another country, and when she heard the illumined worlds, she thought we were saying the aluminum worlds. Isn't that hysterical? And so she used to say the aluminum worlds. Like, no, that's a different place. Oh, gosh. So in the illumined worlds, right, those are the worlds that exist, you know, in where you are in your divine nature, and they are non-polarized. And the illumined worlds sent specifically the world of Venus, a higher dimensional aspect of Venus, not the gas planet that everybody thinks of here, sent at the time when the clarion call went out that the Earth was in danger of going through what the Bible would call second death. And at that time, what happens is, just to kind of reiterate, when you have a system of planets like our solar system, they will all move together. So there are different octaves of evolution. And a system of planets, when they're created together, they are intended to move together. Well, when you have one planet that moves into that state of fallen consciousness, such as happened on Earth, then you have an issue, because when it's time for planets to ascend to the next octave, that one planet is lacking and it can't move with the group. That's why, actually, when you look at our solar system, all these other planets don't support life, right? Well, it's not that they don't support life. They're actually teeming with life, but we can't experience that because they're teeming with life from a higher dimensional aspect. And Earth was meant, always to be part of where the rest of the solar system is, existing. And we missed that last bump up, okay, because consciousness had fallen. So this clarion call had gone out because it was known that it would be time for the whole system to move again. Earth could not make that move. At that point, what happens that the Bible does call second death is that the planet and its humanity that is found lacking actually gets brought back into its primordial state. It gets kind of think of it as like this energy went out and was made manifest, and it gets brought back into its unmanifest state. So what that means for sentient life would be that those beings who were part of that system, who had numerous lifetimes, when they get brought back in, all of that quote-unquote history, bad word to use, but for lack of any better word, all of that experience, I guess, would get completely washed away. So it would be like, waking up with amnesia, like if you're recreated, you'd be fresh, right? Kind of like the way we were born here as a baby, it's fresh. Okay, so on this planet, that call had gone out, and one extremely evolved being named Sanat Kamata, part of the Kamatas of Venus, stepped forward at that time and said, I would like to volunteer to go to Earth and hold the light for its humanity until such time that its humanity can hold it for itself. The hope was that through the pure presence of Sanat Kamata's capacity, that he could hold that, which would give others time to help humanity to, obviously slowly wake up, out of this dream state that we all have been existing in. So Sanat Kamata made this decision that he would volunteer to do that, and it had never been tried before in any system of worlds. And his petition was accepted, kind of as an experiment, I guess, would it actually work, because it hadn't been tried. So when word got out that Sanat Kamata had gone forward and done that, 144,000 Venusians came, led by the Buddha, Gautama Buddha. They were led by him and came up on Shambhala, which is the home of Sanat Kamata and the Kamatas in Venus. And they all said, if you're going, we're going with you, And that's why I'm sitting here today, as daughter of Sanat Kamata and Lady Master Venus. I was one of those people who decided that I would be coming, and that we would all become, we're all kind of masters enslaved here. Think of it that way. You're already an ascended master. If you're listening to this program, I can almost guarantee you are. It'd be odd. I've said before, I have a very specific energy. My energy is the energy of the Kamatas. And if you are drawn to listening to me specifically, and through the lineage I work with. So my guide, Atona Reyes, would be the same thing. If you're drawn to that, that means that more than likely you would easily consider yourself one of that group of people. If not that specific group of people, certainly one of the many star-seeded on the planet who have come from other systems of worlds to be of service to humanity. So the 144,000 came. And the beautiful thing about this story, and I know I told you my personal story about when I heard about it and how I just like wept. I mean, it was like so emotional for me. And I am always just overwhelmed by the sacrifice, the complete and utter selflessness, and the amount of love that went into all of these beings coming together and saying, let's go, because they all knew what was going to happen. Now, not from a place of having experienced it before, so they actually knew it, but they intellectually, we'll say, understood it meant that they were going to go into a dream state, right? Where they wouldn't remember home, where they wouldn't remember themselves as God, and would have to literally move through the process of evolution to the point where their consciousness would awaken fully again before they would be able to return home. So so for the time being, you know, it doesn't mean that you still exist on that level. So it doesn't mean you don't, but part of you is kind of trapped here. And so your awareness is here, but this is not, it's not actually happening. It's very hard to get your head around this. It's not actually happening, but for right now, it seems as though this is actually happening. And this is where you are living and having your beingness. And it's actually not true. But until that full-on awakening happens, this is kind of where you'll be trapped. So why am I talking about this tonight? Well, because we're in the midst of truly the beginning stages of the 144,000 going through their full-on awakening process. And why is that important? Well, it's very important. The 144,000 came in service with the understanding that all that needed to happen on this planet was for those 144,000 to awaken. And at the time when all 144,000 awaken, right, move into that Christed level of consciousness, at that point, it would enable all of humanity to make that shift, okay? Because humanity is the thing that the root race is here on the earth. Those are the ones who fell. They went through the initial fall, right? And of course, they went through the fall because of their act of selflessness and their act of love by taking on the laggard souls from another system, right? And thinking that through birthing them here, they could actually help them move back into that state of non-duality. And unfortunately, it backfired. It did the opposite. And humanity fell here. So that's why this planet is so loved, because you have a root race that literally said, you know, kind of we'll risk it all out of our love for these people we don't even know, right? It's very beautiful. And so that's why it's so worth it for all of us who came here to be of service. We just are doing the same kind of act of love that they were doing at that time. And the thing is that, you know, we all came knowing that we didn't quite know when we would all wake up, right? It seems very simple when you're outside of duality, when you know yourself to be God and you exist in that illumined state all the time and there's nothing outside of it. Intellectually, you can say, oh, yeah, so there's a, so there we actually would believe that we're separate from God. And it's like this, huh, that's interesting. And it doesn't seem very real, but now obviously all of you have the experience of actually believing that that is real, because that's what you're living in every day. And right now you can intellectually say, well, of course I'm God, or are part of God. A lot of people don't feel comfortable yet even saying I'm God. And so intellectually you can do that, but you don't really believe it, right? So the difference is that the Christ itself knows it through and through. I mean, there's nothing outside of that. You are the one. So yeah, we're moving in this. And so what we're seeing right now is this energy the energy is just crazy. And there's so much coming up now. So anything we have to realize, we're in a polarized reality. And remember, I've told you that this world functions on the whole thing about balance, right? It's all, everything, karma, everything is meant to balance the poles. So we have this huge uprising of souls on the planet who are waking up, remembering the calling, and it's coming. And they have this, you know, for a lot of us, like people like myself, PLEN, like people who have been on their spiritual paths and have been very serious about it for a very long time. You know, we heard that call a long time ago. Okay. So this is not new to us, but there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there who now are starting to feel the call, and it's coming from their hearts, but they don't even know what it is. Right. They can't put their finger on it. And it was kind of like, I think you could equate it to my personal experience of that understanding that I came into in the very beginning of my work, that this wasn't home and I couldn't put my finger on it. It's like, well, that's ridiculous. Of course it's home. And I know I've lived here over and over and over again, but it was like, no, this isn't home for you, you know? And I couldn't really place it, but I knew that it was true. And I felt the resonance of it when it came to me. And so now we have, you know, well over 100,000 people who are going into this stage from all walks of life, from all different countries around the world, you know, and you name it, and they're living it. And the challenge will be to get all of us connected, right, so that we can move through this together. And there are groups on the planet, and if you put any, you know, you type in 144,000 in the internet, or you go on Facebook and search for something around that, I mean, you will find multiple groups that are already out there based on that. And it's because they're all led by people who have woken up enough to recognize there's a need for this. You know, there's a need for this now. There's a particular group of people that are working on bringing together the members of the 144,000 for meditation / concerts, you know, which will bring people who can raise that level of energy with really high vibrational music and light to move a huge group of people simultaneously into an experience outside of this paradigm, you know, which will work to activate what needs to be activated. When all the activation is done, then humanity can actually truly move forward the way that we all know it's meant to, you know. So with it comes all of this crazy energy. And what, you know, we were talking about with the whole, in talking about the vow of poverty thing, right, it's part of that. That's exactly what this is. It's that energy that the 144,000 carry that says it's all about what is in the highest good of all concerned. That's what matters. It's inclusive, right? It's not exclusive. And society in the world, generally speaking, of course, there will be exceptions, but generally speaking, the way that society functions globally is very exclusive, right? So everything is about me and mine, right? And me holding on to it and not letting it go and making sure it's protected, and because you're out to get me, right? Well, the stars seated on this planet come from outside of that paradigm. So what we understand is the complete opposite. We understand that the world is abundant. Yeah, that there's more than enough to go around. That there's no need even for ownership, right? So if you think about that, that right there will send people into a whole thing. Oh, what do you mean? Like, no ownership. Oh my gosh. But think about it for a second. If you reside in a state of consciousness where anything that comes through you, through the will of God itself, is made manifest instantaneously, what need would there be to own anything? Right? What need would there be to feel like you have to grab it for yourself? Because the person next to you could manifest it just as easily, right? like, no, my house has to be there. Right? You can't have that land. Well, they could make the land look just like that someplace else. What would it matter? Right? And if you see it just from that place, it seems very simple, but it's a very complex thing for people here to get their head around, you know, because this entire paradigm is based in lack and in scarcity, you know. And it's, of course, it came from a very innocent place because it just came out of this space of really profound, deep fear, right? So you have the personal self that thinks that I've been kicked out and I'm stuck here by myself and I have to make it work by myself. And so what, where do we function from? We function from the place of what I want is I want inclusivity, right? I want to be accepted by God, loved by God, right? I want to be able to rejoin, right? But then where does the personal self function from? It functions from the exact opposite, from exclusivity. It says, I'm on my own. I don't need you. I'm better off by myself. I'll make it work. Right? And if you try to help me, I might let you in a little bit, but I'm going to protect myself at the same time. Because my expectation is that something negative is going to come. Because that was the experience that it seemed to have. It actually didn't have it. It just took an experience and it turned it into a concept that it latched onto, right? But it was just a concept. And that was something that actually came up for me today in a conversation that I had, was talking about, for those who are, especially those of you listening who have been working with me for a while, we were talking specifically about how do you walk out of identification. Right. So many people who've worked with me, you know, they've gone through the processing. They understand how to process something when they get triggered, right? How to see it, see what's at play. And then there comes a point that goes beyond just knowing how to process something where you can actually witness what is at play. And just as quickly as you witness it, you can be done with it and walk out of it completely and not have it still wrapping itself around you. And it all comes down to just really witnessing the concept that's at play. Because along the line, some concept was attached to and believed in. And it could be anything, right? But it's all concepts, everything. Everything's just a concept here, right? And those are the things that are tethering you to this life-death cycle, are these concepts that we're believing in. One of them being life and death. Kind of a big one, right? Yeah. I mean, you tell someone, I mean, you know, let's face the facts. You grab someone off the street who has not been on their spiritual path and you say to them, did you know that the life-death cycle isn't even necessary? No one really has to go through physical death. They'd say, you're crazy, right? You're absolutely crazy because look at the proof everywhere, right? And that's one of the ways that the lower mind uses the manifest reality to support the story that's being presented. It says, well, look at the proof. There it is. You know? And so if you can identify and attach to the proof you see in the world, then that makes it true for you. And if it makes it true for you, now you've just latched onto it and you aren't going to let it go. So let's say we'll go back to, remember, I love to talk about third party communication. So we'll go back to some situation, and let's say PLN is with a couple coworkers, right? And one of the coworkers is talking about another one, and they said, oh, you know, so-and-so is a liar, right? And then over the course of the next week, PLN actually sees two instances that seem to support the fact that this person is a liar. And let's say it's an email form, right? So here's an email and you can see it written out, something there. And then say on another email, you see the opposite written and it looks like it's, how could you not? That's proof. Here it is on paper. It's proof, right? But it really doesn't make it proof, does it? Because now at this point, she's going to identify this person with, this person is a liar. Not that there could have been one particular situation and who knows what was going on at that time that would cause this person to communicate this way with one person and this way with another. You have no way of knowing. It's pure projection no matter what, right? And so what we could recognize is that for whatever reason, in that particular situation, the person gave two different pieces of information. Does it make them a liar? Really? Not really. But how many of us would just take that and now you are a liar. And you will remain so indefinitely until, you know, through whatever it is you have to do to prove to us that you're not a liar anymore, we could start to trust you again. And that's where we all function from. It's completely unnecessary. Right? So just back to these energies are running and they're really strong. And I'm just going to forewarn you, not to scare you, but to definitely forewarn you, it's going to continue to ramp up. I know people always kind of grumble when I say that. I know that because I know that the light quotient on the planet is getting higher. I feel it. I'm watching it with people I work with. You can see it because people move through processes that maybe for me took a week, and I'm watching someone move through it in an hour, right? What does that say? Well, it says the collective is functioning at a higher resonance than it was, say, 8 years ago. So what do we know again? It's all based on balance. So if I can see that the light quotient is raising, then what do I know about the non-light quotient? It's got to be doing the same thing because it has to be held in balance. And of course, those of you listening who are out in the world on a daily basis, you're seeing this. Pielian, do you want to speak to that? Because you actually are out in the world, in the banking industry of all things.
Yeah, I'll speak to that. I mean, it's everything is, it seems like everyone is grasping at straws. They're hanging on for dear life. And things are falling apart, not just like work-wise, because of course everyone's so worried about their job and stability, and just as far as like work itself goes, we just keep getting more stuff slapped on to just add more pressure, but they're really trying to hold it together, but it's making it fall apart more. So that's just making it worse because it's driving everybody crazy. But then just everyone's lives. I mean, you know, you could tell people had a plan, you know, and they're constantly trying to revisit the plan and keep it moving and, you know, do better. And it just continues to fall apart.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It goes back to the whole concept that you're the doer, which isn't accurate. You're not the doer, at least not the concept you have of who you are. Okay. The personality that you are is not the doer. And that's something that is really hard to get yourself wrapped around because wow, does it feel like it? Right. But in actuality, that's not what's happening. So exactly what you're saying, it's beautiful what you said, that it's like they keep grasping at it. They had a plan and they keep trying so hard. And the harder they try, the more it's falling apart. That's very, very accurate because the doer, right, the one who considers himself to be the doer, isn't actually the doer. So the more it claws at it, where is it functioning from? It's actually functioning out of fear, right? They had a plan. Why was there a plan? There was a plan because it was a reaction to something that was actually happening or not happening that they desired, right? So they had to make the plan and then stick to the plan because basically they're running away from something. Do you see that? Yeah. And what's really happening as far as the doingness goes out there is that there is stuff that's being done through you, right? But you aren't the one doing it and you're not the one responsible for what's going to happen with it, right? Remember I always say like God needs a body. So you're there to be the body to let spirit experience life in whatever form, doing whatever it is, okay? But you're just there to facilitate that, not to be the one in control of deciding if it's good or bad, or deciding if it should continue or stop, any of that, right? That's way beyond anything you need to concern yourself with. And that's a very hard state for people to live in. Okay, that's the whole, what do we call it? I just completely lost the word for it. It's kind of the how you would live in the world now. It's like this 3-point plan that I share with people. You know, the first step is that you have to not be in denial about what you see going on, right? The second step is that you have to do what you can to help, to be of assistance, right? That's that inclusivity. See it? It's right there. It says, I'm not moving through my world with blinders on. I see that there is a need, right? And now, because it would be in the highest good of all concern for me to help that need, I will take action to do that. But then the key part, because remember, that could be the doer. Because the doer could say, oh my gosh, there are starving children in Africa, and it's my mission to fix this problem. And it's coming from a place of pain, right? And when it's coming from a place of pain, what's going to happen? You can't fix that problem. You're just going to perpetuate the problem, right? But when it comes from outside of the personal self, and that Christed self sees the need, right? Then it addresses the need, but it doesn't attach to the outcome, because that it's not your concern. All you got to do is just show up, right? Do what you're guided to do. Be in joy while you're doing it, right? You could be at peace and in a state of bliss, even doing just your day-to-day work. Why? Because if you're fully in the present, that's all that exists for you. Why wouldn't you be happy doing it? I mean, like going to work at the bank, right? That could be a serious downer. But if you're fully if you're fully present, then all of the stories that you have associated with it being a downer just vanished. So as far as the bank being in, you know, everybody in the country hates the bank. So you have that going on. You have, you know, just issues with what's going on in the bank, and then mismanagement issues and who knows what else, interpersonal issues in the bank and all this stuff. If all of that is running when you walk into work, then you will feel the energy of that, and you'll be bombarded with that, and that will wrap itself around you. And then you'll end up living that state of consciousness and experiencing it. But if you are fully present, that means that you walk in the door and there's no story, right? It's just spirit moves to a particular spot and it sits down and it starts doing whatever it is it is guided to do. And when there's no story, well, why wouldn't it be a joyful experience, right? I mean, recognize that even just in that moment when you sit down at your desk and you have that moment of, oh, I hate my job, that's a huge story. And that story is coloring your perception of your life. And it doesn't even mean it's real, right? And you may say, well, you don't know my job. Well, I don't care what your job is. I don't care. The fact is, if you dropped the story and if you were just fully present, right? No sense of self there, just doing whatever it is that's being presented in the moment. Seeing that whatever that is that's being presented is the eternal. It's right there in front of you. The eternal is everywhere in some form of presentation or other. It's everywhere. So you're always interacting with the eternal. What's not to be joyful about? Right? Why is it that you could take two people and bring them out to my vegetable garden in my backyard and ask them both to go start weeding, and one of them will be in bliss for the next hour while they're digging weeds up, and the other one's going to be miserable? Why? Is there any difference between them other than the stories that they're holding on to? Right? One of them says, oh, what a great opportunity to get my hands in the earth and to really be grounded, and you know, I can feel it, part of the process of life, and it's beautiful, blah, blah, blah. And then the other one says, ew, I hate to get my hands dirty. Ew, I'll never get the dirt out from under my fingernails. Right? What changed there? It has nothing to do with the plot of land. It's not that the dirt was different for one person than it was for the other, right? It's just their stories. And everything is learned. And the really cool thing about that is that if it was learned, it can be unlearned. Right? And isn't that what we're here? That's what I'm here to do with you, certainly, is to start doing what I can to point you to all of these things that you can recognize. Oh my gosh, like I've thought that was real forever, but if I really look at it, is it true? Is it true? Or have I just been holding on to that because why? Because it was taught to me and I made the assumption that it was accurate because my parents taught it to me. And you just assume that they're right. Or society says that this is how it should be. So I just took it on as my own and I've been living from it. Right? And in my living from it, I've been very self-righteous in it. That's not easy to see. Unless you have someone pointing it out to you. It's not easy to see. Self-righteousness hides very well. It's very subtle. And now it's not subtle with everybody. Everyone can pick out someone who's being self-righteous, right? It's very easy in another person. Not so easy when it's home. But that's my job, right? The challenge that I have with these programs is that I can't sit with you one-on-one and guide you through from the very first step of me meeting with someone up through the point where they, you know, have gone through huge levels of dissolution, because I have people coming in and leaving and you never know where they're going to come in and what they've heard, what they haven't heard. So you might come in and the whole thing would be over your head, right? It's really hard for me to gauge this. So what I hope that I can continue just to keep doing is to keep bringing you back to some of these very basic kind of tenets that we function from in this dissolution work. It's time to really look very closely at the stories that you've been carrying. Knowing, okay, part of your work, if you are truly interested in doing deep spiritual work, is that once you're given an understanding, right, you have a responsibility to function from that understanding, even though it won't be yours yet. And that is a very challenging thing. Pelion, do you want to speak to that at all? Do you have anything you could say about that? Oh, now she's going to have to cough. It was really bad timing, wasn't it? Sorry.
Say that again.
You want me to say the question again?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Can I pull up the question again? This is a good question. Hang on a second. What was the question? Terrible.
I don't know. All of a sudden, everything just went to don't cough.
This is the one downside to being so present that memory just doesn't serve you anymore. It comes and it goes. All right. She's having her coughing fit. So sorry.
I think I'm good now.
Okay. So let me try to remember what it was that I was asking you if you wanted to speak to. Oh, functioning from an understanding before it's actually yours. The challenge in that.
You mean like before you've actually experienced it and Yes. Now you know?
Yep.
I would say it's one of those fake it till you make it type deals where you don't really know it just yet, but you just keep telling yourself, this is how I'm supposed to, this is how I'm supposed to, and just really function from there.
And how does it feel when you're actually in the process of that?
It's one of those things where you're kind of just, I'm going to say when you're walking on faith, you know, bad word, but hoping that what you're doing is, you know, going to get you there is right. But really, you're just kind of walking completely on faith with that.
And is it a comfortable feeling?
Hell no. No. A lot of times it's kind of scary, you know? It's
'cause absolutely.
You don't really know, is this really right? You're just you know, Shusara said it is, so I'm going to do it.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
One of those.
And it, so in your experience, what has been your experience of following that? You say, you know, Shusara said I should, so I'm going to. So what has been your experience in following the teachings and functioning from that? What has it shown you?
That you're always right. No, I'm just no. No, what is, I would say the biggest thing that it's shown me, is if you continue to do it, once you get there, it's really kind of already in place. It's easier. And it just makes everything fall into place so much better. As far as you're like, oh, like now I see why I was doing that. Now I know why this is the teaching. Like now it makes so much sense. And it's one of those things where you're like, that was so simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And so much of the work is so simple. I mean, it's like, it's stupid simple. Right?
Yes. Yes.
And it's hysterical because I have the experience over and over again with students where they hit that moment of realization and they see it and they're like, how did I never see that before? You know, I mean, that is so, it's so obvious. How did I never see it? And the answer is very simple. It's you couldn't, you know, because of where consciousness was, you couldn't see that. The only way you can see that is to be guided to it. You can't see it on your own. If you could see it on your own, everybody, you wouldn't be listening to me right now, and you wouldn't be functioning here in this planet. There wouldn't be any need for it, you know. If enlightenment was simple, it'd all be over and done with, right? It actually, on the other side of it, it's incredibly simple. But on this side of it, it seems incredibly difficult, and it will challenge you to your very core. Now, it doesn't challenge you, remember, because you aren't that personality that you have associated yourself with. It challenges the personality. It challenges the ego very strongly. And that's what we're seeing right now going on collectively. The ego is being challenged big time, big time, big time, big time. And what I experienced, yesterday, I felt a huge wave. I think I put a posting on the Shambhala Center Facebook page about it just to warn people. I try to do that when I know there's a doozy coming. And everyone is going to experience it at different times. I don't know why that is, but the more sensitive you are, kind of the, how do I say this? The less the personal self has its grip, the sooner you seem to feel it, right? And then people who aren't as in tune will feel it later. So sometimes it, like, I'll feel something and someone else won't feel it for like a couple of weeks, right? And then it just comes in. And it, when it comes, it comes. So I was warning people, you know, there's a huge wave coming. And the energy of it was, oh, it was kind of like, you ever feel like there's this anticipation, this really nervous energy, and it feels like you've got, say, you know, 10 things that have to get done. They all had to get done yesterday, and you're so overwhelmed by that that you can't get yourself to actually do anything, right? And you find yourself just like walking around the house completely aimless, like you can't even focus. That's the energy I felt yesterday. It was, and it was so strong, and I watched it come through, and I was like, wow, it's like the collective ego is experiencing this sensation. It's kind of like they're almost like a caged animal, right? And that's what the ego is experiencing right now. It is in fight or flight mode. I can feel it. Yeah. And so those of you listening, I want you to look out in the world and see what's going on in the world where you actually see that being acted out, fight or flight. The Ukraine, I mean, look at what's going on there. That's a disaster over there. It's an absolute disaster. We've got all kinds of movement in Egypt still. I mean, you've got, it all will come, and we'll see it in the world. We will definitely see it in the world. Now, the beautiful thing is that for those who do their work, on a personal basis, who really go in and do what I'm pointing you toward. You won't have to necessarily move through the manifest experience in the outside world. See what I'm saying? So you have the opportunity to look inside first and to find these dynamics that are running, right? These very polarized dynamics, such as being inclusive versus being exclusive. Like it's very broad, very big. But this is the time where we're being asked to really look, where are you functioning from? That's why 2 weeks ago we did the program on, the first part of the program on, are you ready to take your own personal vow of poverty? Because that's what that was pointing to. The whole point of it was, are you ready to say that I'm willing to just do my work for the sake of doing my work, for the beauty of that, and then let the benefits of it go to everybody equally? Or are you going to say that because I've invested this much time and this much training to have this kind of profession, that I deserve to be valued more than others? Yeah, and I deserve to have a better standard of life than others. And others who may work harder than me because of the lack of professional training or lack of intellectual functioning in the job, they don't deserve to be valued as much. I mean, that's the world we sit in. But that's not where those of us listening to this program really sit. And that's our challenge right now. Your challenge is, in your heart of hearts, you know the truth, right? In your heart of hearts, you know everybody is equal. You know that. You of course you know that. But you've been trained from the time you were tiny, tiny, tiny to believe that that's not true. You were trained to hold it as an ideal, right? Through your church, through your parents. But you weren't trained to hold it in application. And you see the hypocrisy built into that. Yes, we're going to be good Christians, and we're going to say, love thy neighbor, turn the other cheek. How many of you are that capable? Really? I mean, think about it. They're hard questions, and they'll bring stuff up for you that may not feel very comfortable to look at it, because ego is going to say, well, I want that to be true for me. I want me to be that person because it's an ideal, right? But what it knows is that when it really comes down to it, I'm going to kick and bite and scratch to get what's mine, and to hell with everybody else. I mean, that's really where people function from. Now, remember, it's all coming from a very innocent place. I'm going to repeat that over and over and over again. There's no one evil in the world. There is evil in the world, but there's no one evil in the world. Do you understand that? Yes, there is quote unquote evil in the world. There are definitely things going on that are functioning very strongly against the continuation of the expansion of light on the planet. No question. Okay. But those beings that you see who seem to be the ones in charge of these evil doings are not evil. They're very innocent. Believe it or not, they're functioning the way they are because they think it's the right thing to do. Now, you can look from your perspective and say, well, it's obviously not the right thing to do. Can there be truth to that? Absolutely. And maybe not. You don't have the whole picture, do you? That's the thing that kills me about how, just society bases all of its, everything I ever needed to know, I got off of the TV news, and now I can base all of my information on that half an hour program, and I'm right because it came through that channel. Excuse me? you know? I'm sorry. Unless you are actually part of whatever it is that's moving, you can't know what's really happening. You can't. Right? And so it's very... You know, of course, it comes out of innocence too, because we're kind of taught from a young age that you can, that like, especially news channels are trustworthy, right? And it, maybe it used to be that way. It certainly is not that way now. That time has come and gone. You know, the days of Murrow are over. So then it comes from a place of, for most people, really, of fear, right? Because the fear is, oh my gosh, what if it's not true? What if I have invested myself in identifying with a particular station, let's say, right? Because they all seem to have their own perspective. And I've invested, say, years of watching this particular station and listening and taking on what I'm hearing as my own truth and all that. And what if I actually have to sit and look at maybe it was wrong? Are you ready to do that? That's big. It's really, really big. But everybody has to be willing to do that. You're not walking out of here until you are. If you think that, I don't care what news channel is, I don't care. If you think any of them have the whole story, then, you know, you're sorely mistaken. You're either very gullible because you have extremely rose-colored glasses on, or you're in denial because you have a sense underneath it all that there's something that could, there could be more to the story, and it scares you, right? And I've seen that in people. I've seen people get really, really, I mean, even volatile if you bring something to them that's outside of their comfort zone, you know. I've seen it especially with people's concept of patriotism. Seen that on a very personal basis. I saw that once. I brought up a comment that challenged someone concerning something that happened in this country, where the news and society in general presented it one way, but the facts for it actually supported the other side. And of course, the news wasn't presenting that side. But all the researchers that got involved and all the people who questioned it, you know, I mean, there was no question if you actually pulled up all the research and information. There's no question that something more was going on. And I actually brought that up to someone one day, and that person, like, wigged out on me. I literally watched mind hit that wall where it couldn't accept what was happening, and it just like shut down, and that person, he just had to walk away from me. So irate, just had to walk away. You know, I wasn't irate. I was just saying, you know, I think it's worthy of looking at the other side, you know, just have an open mind, just take a look at it. And whoa, was not going to happen. But from a very innocent place, we can look back at, I could look at this particular person and see, well, of course, based on the time the person was born, based on what was going on in the world during that person's formative years, you know, based on all of these contributing factors throughout this person's life, you can say, of course, if I had been through all of that, I would be holding the same exact position that person is, right? Now, when you're capable of seeing that, now you're seeing deeper into what's really going on. Now you're beginning to get to a place where you can truly see the innocence in all of it, right? It's not that the person isn't willing to look at it because the person's a bad person. Not at all, you know? In this particular case, it was the exact opposite. An absolutely wonderful, beautiful person who just had blinders on when it comes to this one thing, because it was just too challenging to think that, oh my gosh, they've been lying to us, right? And especially when it comes to, you know, God and country, that whole thing, wow, there's just a lot of energy invested in that. So if I'm going to bring you something and it's going to show you something about, you know, a thing that you have placed so much pride in, and we'll use the country this time for an example. You know, if you're proud to be an American, and I'm going to bring you a piece of information that shows that you've got something to not be very proud of as an American, there are a lot of people in our country who just can't go there. They just can't go there. It's just too challenging for their belief system, right? Other countries have no issues with uprisings, you know, like in France. They just, the slightest little thing, they're like, it's an uprising. And good for them, because they don't have a problem speaking up and saying, no, we're not going to do it, right? Founders of democracy, not a bad thing. Good for them. We do it over here, and oh my gosh, right? We can't have that. Well, I thought that, you know, if you really look, that's kind of what this country was based on. All the founding fathers basically said, you know, an uprising every now and again is a good thing. Right? If you do your research. All right. But I didn't want to talk to you about politics. The point is, there's this energy moving. It's going to continue. It's going to continue to ramp up. You're going to see it. You're looking at the dissolution. Okay. This is the dissolution of your inner world and the outer world happening simultaneously. And it's going to push people to their absolute limits. And that's why now is the time, if there ever was a time, now is the time to really begin to practice putting that observer cap on and detaching from all of those personal stories that we're holding onto. All the grudges that we hold against people, right? All of the reasons that we have to not like people or to say that those people are bad or whatever that stuff is. Everybody holds something. Whether it's people from another country or people from another race, people from another town, right? Sports teams love that. You know, one team, they hate the other team. Why do they hate the other team? Well, because they do, because they're competitors. You know, but you don't even know each other. Why would you hate each other? It doesn't make any sense, right? Well, it's just the way it is. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. So if you resonate with this 144,000, and those of you who do, there will be no question it triggered something in you. We do have a new Facebook page up. It's called The 144K. And I put it up because I wanted it as a means that I could use to communicate with people as things continue to move and the 144,000 are being called to come together, either remotely through group meditation work or whatever, or even in select areas where we're going to have gatherings. They are coming. I can't tell you exactly when, but I don't think it's going to be too far in the future. So if you feel connected, please go over and like that page. It's, again, it's facebook.com, the 144K. And that's a way we can use to kind of get information out as it's needed. I think that's about it for tonight. We, again, always love to direct you to the Shambhala Center website. So it's just theshambhalacenter.org. We appreciate and we'll gratefully accept any donations that you would like to put forward to our church. It still always feels funny calling it a church or nonprofit church. You can do that through PayPal at any time, even through our BBS page. That would be greatly appreciated. And we're going to leave you tonight with a beautiful piece of music that is actually being presented, I believe, for the purpose of the 144,000. So let's go into meditation tonight to that song. We'll call on the Violet Flame to transmute anything that came up for anybody this evening. And we will see you a week from tonight for Satsang. Thank you so much. We love you. Thank you.
You are divine.